great fear and trembling shall seize them, even to the ends of the earth. The lofty mountains shall be troubled, and the exalted hills depressed, melting like a honeycomb in the flame. The earth shall be hurt, and all things which are in it perish, while judgment shall come upon all, even upon all the righteous. But to them shall he give peace. He shall preserve the elect, and towards them exercise clemency. Then shall all belong to God, be happy and blessed, and the splendor of the Godhead shall illuminate them. Behold, he comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon them, and destroy the wicked, and remove all the carnal forces.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls, a journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension, the world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at voices that led rescuers to a toddler trapped in a car, a jawbone fossil in Ethiopia sheds light on human origins, a girl dies after being lost in the catacombs, a real-time radio burst found outside of the Milky Way, a farmer says a skull he found in a box is from a werewolf, and the Fairy Investigation Society. That a lot more in the 67th episode of the 13 Skulls.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back, everybody. How are you guys? I hope you're doing good. It has been entirely too long since we have talked. You know, I really didn't have any idea that there would be a 2.5 year hiatus of sorts. It just happened that way. It's been a fun, enjoyable, wonderful time of my life having my daughter Malia and my second daughter Morgan. I don't know if any of you really know that because I'm not very open with my personal life. I do now have two daughters. They're doing really good. They're great. I love them to death. You know, I've always wanted to put shows out, and I started to put a little bit more effort into it. I finally have a sound booth / isolation chamber to record in, because when I was getting ready to put shows out, and then my wife got pregnant again, so the room that I was recording in, we had to change it into another bedroom, so I ended up with no place to record except for my living room, and the acoustics were terrible, the sound was horrible, so it took me quite a long time, and, you know, having to buy piece by piece here and there, I finally have an isolation chamber that it was told to me by Rogan out at the Project Archivist podcast that it was more of an isolation chamber than a sound booth, because it doesn't have a window in it, so you can't really see. But so far, I think the acoustics work out fairly well. They can't hear me on the outside, and I can barely hear them. You know, I've been wanting to put shows out for a long time, so I'm really happy to be able to do that. It feels great to get behind the microphone again. I hope you guys are doing good. I sincerely apologize for it being so long since I got a show out. I really should have gotten shows out sooner, or at least some sort of an update to let you guys know what was going on with the show, but, you know, I got lost in life raising my daughter. So the website's changed a little bit. GoDaddy, with their quick blogcast service, they took it down, so the website had to change, and it changed and changed a couple of different times, and now it is on Podbean. I do like it more in certain ways, so go check it out. We do have some affiliates on there now, at least one. I'm working on several to be able to try and bring in some revenue from the website. With all of that said, let's go ahead and just get on with the show. The first thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of disclose.tv. And apparently, there is some evidence that the moon is an artificial alien base. Several strange phenomena have led some to believe that the eternal companion of the Earth, the Moon, is in fact some sort of huge spaceship. A curious video taken from a backyard telescope which shows an alleged UFO fleet over the Moon caused a stir worldwide. Those who believe in the alien Moon theory state that the Moon had to be created by a highly developed civilization more so than ours. Especially if the entirety of the moon is artificial, it would take advanced technology than what we can even conceive of. Under this unusual logic, our artificial satellite would have to be hollow inside so that within it the aliens could fuel spaceships, store fuel for machinery, materials, and accessories that would be used to repair navigational instruments, observation equipment, and all kinds of machinery. But most importantly, it could actually be used as a gigantic underground base or even a giant spaceship. The spaceship part is where I think that it would have to really be something far more advanced technologically than what we know. Anyway, it says that if to all of the above we add the fact that there are some astronauts, those who went on NASA's missions such as the Apollo, the now retired astronauts have publicly said that they have had contact with UFOs and aliens, and that there are even extraterrestrial beings living there. Having said that, for some, this does not sound crazy after all. Google Moon photographs used in the Sea of Muscovy come from the Japanese probe Kagoya, also known as Selene, the Selenological and Engineering Explorer, which for nearly 2 years was analyzing various aspects of the moon. The interest in this particular area is very big, as ufologists claim that this specific area is very attractive when looking for anomalies. Recently, triangular objects have been spotted on the surface of the moon, leading ufologists to speculate about the purpose of the odd objects, but skeptics argue that the mysterious objects are actually simple pixels that do not appear in the original image. In addition, they argue that if you look closely, you can see a set of other points scattered by other areas of the moon. The answer to this is that Google stores multiple image frames in various resolutions using filters that create noise, which would explain why you would see something weird in the photographs on the moon. And what you're going to see here with the rest of the article, there's a little bit more there to read, and a video, The Artificial Moon Theory Explained. It's about an hour, 16 minutes, and 38 seconds long. It's a YouTube video. It's a really interesting video. You should go and take a look at it and watch it if you have an hour and a half to just sit back and watch something. It's an interesting watch. There's some pictures there that appear to show what looks like could be a triangular shaped craft, could be a pyramid, could be an entry into an underground base or a bunker of some sort. The second one down there on the bottom really doesn't look like much of anything special. It just kind of looks like a blob. So that one I can see as the different layered pictures of different resolutions layered on top of each other and just kind of not matching up. It's kind of what that second one looks like. The top one, I don't know, could be Photoshopped, you never know. It's an interesting picture though, to go say the least. So let's move on to the next article, which is courtesy of raz.org.uk, and that's RAS. Cosmic radio burst was caught red-handed outside of the Milky Way galaxy. Astronomers using CSIRO, or C-S-I-R-O's 64-meter Parkes radio telescope in eastern Australia, have for the first time seen a fast radio burst. A short, sharp flash of radio waves from an unknown source happening live. This brings us a step closer to understanding the phenomenon, which astronomers worldwide are vying to explain. The finding is published in monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. Lasting only milliseconds, the first such radio burst was discovered in 2007 by astronomers combining the Parkes data archive for objects. Six more bursts, apparently from outside of our galaxy, have now been found with Parkes, and even a seventh within the Arecibo telescope in Puerto Rico. These bursts were generally discovered weeks or months or even more than a decade after they happened. We're the first ones to catch one in real time, said Emily Petroff, a PhD candidate co-supervised by CSIRO and the Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne, Australia, which is a member of the Institution of the Arc Center of Excellence for All Sky Astrophysics. After Parkes saw the burst go off, the team swung into action on 12 telescopes around the world in Australia, California, the Canary Islands, Chile, Germany, Hawaii, India, and even in space. No optical, infrared, ultraviolet, or X-ray counterpart showed up. That in itself rules out some possible candidates, such as a long gamma ray burst in nearby supernova, said team member Dr. Mansi Khosrowal of the Carnegie Institution in Pasadena, California. But short or low-energy gamma-ray bursts and giant flares from distant magnetars are still contenders, so too are the imploding neutron stars. The burst left another clue to its identity, but it's a puzzling one. Parkes' real-time detection system captured its polarization, something that has not been recorded for previous bursts. Polarization can be thought of as the direction electromagnetic waves, such as light or radio waves, vibrate. It can be linear or circular. The radio emission from the new fast radio burst was more than 20% circularly polarized, which hints that there are strong magnetic fields near the source. Identifying the origin of the radio burst is now only a matter of time. Well, let's hope that they figure out what it is. There's a video there, a cosmic radio burst caught red-handed. There's a video there for you to go to watch. I thought it was really interesting. It really is only a matter of time before we find out if there's life out there for sure, whether it is merely just bacteria on a different planet or if there actually is some sort of intelligent life somewhere out there. Granted, take what you can from the word intelligent and put whatever meaning on it you want. Intelligence means different things to different people. Really smart people think intelligence is, being able to fly through space or something more advanced than that. For me, intelligence means that you can communicate and can live in a society. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. Granted, this is from the HuffPost, so, take it with a grain of salt. Police in Connecticut are investigating the discovery of two human skulls found at a dump. An employee at the Stamford Refuse Transfer Station reportedly found two skulls, a jawbone, and several books, 10 roughly, on Satan and witchcraft while sifting through the trash. The worker initially thought it might be a Halloween prank, but the medical examiner's office confirmed that the skulls were human. "We've got some homework to do to find out where they came from and how they got to Stamford," said Lieutenant Diedrich Hone of the Stamford Police Department. Cops want to determine a cause of death and see if they can track down where the skulls came from. The Hartford Courant reports that human skulls can be purchased on the black market or online from medical supply houses, but there's also a possibility that the bones could have been taken from a grave. I understand people and what they believe can be a little bit weird sometimes, and having human skulls, if you're practicing witchcraft or worshiping Satan or anything like that, it kind of goes hand in hand, having a human skull with you while you're doing that kind of stuff. Things like that, they're a bit more intense than other religions. especially as far as having relics and, you know, body parts and things like that connected with what they do. Anyway, I thought it was interesting, but why is it at a dump? Did you just stop worshiping whatever it was you were worshiping or stop practicing witchcraft? So you decided to just bag it all up, put it in the trash, and let the trash men come pick it up? Interesting. It really does make you wonder. All right, the next article is courtesy of theage.com.au. A mysterious voice led rescuers to toddler trapped in a car in a freezing river. Now, a lot of you probably have already heard about this, about the woman whose car went over the side of a bridge, landed upside down in the water. She was dead, but the baby survived hanging upside down for 14 hours in the car. Luckily, was not touching the water. It's miraculous that the girl survived anyway, that the baby survived. You know, being 18 months old, upside down, being near water can pull the heat from you, so it can make your core temperature drop. And only being 18 months old, she doesn't really have a whole lot there to keep her warm. So being that close to water, upside down, is just crazy that she survived. But what makes it even more weird is that the emergency workers were saying that they heard someone saying, "Help me," while they were going down to the car. The funny part is that Lynn Jennifer Grosbeck, the mother of the little girl, was dead. But here, let's listen to what they had to say for themselves.
Felt like I could hear somebody telling me they needed help. It was very surreal. Something that I felt like I could hear. I could
see her eyes fluttering. Life that was there.
The 25-year-old driver, Lynn Grosbeck, was dead, but her daughter was still in the car seat, hanging just above the water. 7 officers and firefighters went into the ice-cold river to get her out.
Just trying to get her out. Just trying to get that seatbelt undone. I could see her eyes open. I could tell there was life there.
So we were fairly close in transitioning and handing the baby off.
So basically, it felt like someone was saying, "Help me, help me." So it may not have been a verbal thing so much as a non-physical push for them to go to the car. Was her mother trying to come back to her as her spirit trying to save her, to get them to rescue her, to know that she was down there? Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting that an 18-month-old survived in a car upside down for that long, and that her mother's spirit possibly was the one who was guiding the workers to save her. The next article is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. Apparently, a jawbone fossil in Ethiopia is shedding lights on human origin. The discovery is the earliest known fossil of the genus Homo and suggests humankind's ancestors were living on open grassland environments near lakes and rivers. A piece of jawbone with teeth attached, uncovered in Ethiopia, is the earliest known fossil of the genus Homo. The discovery suggests that humans' ancestors were living in what is now the Lidi-Garraru research area of Afar regional state in Ethiopia. In open grassland environments near lakes, rivers, and active volcanoes about 2.8 million years ago, or 400,000 years earlier than previously thought. The jawbone, known as LD350-1, is the lower left side mandible with 5 teeth and was found in fine sediment near the surface of the research site in 2013. The fossil has not yet been assigned to a particular species, but its slim molars and dental arch proportions indicate an advancement that is not seen in the more ape-like Australopithecus afarensis dating just a few 100,000 years earlier. Experts describe the fossil as a very early representative of the species that led to modern humans. Though not a direct ancestor, researchers are intrigued because the fossils date to a period when few such artifacts have been found, and sheds light on a time when early hominids diverged. The fossil record in East Africa between 2 and 3 million years ago is very thin, and there are relatively few fossils that can inform us about the origins of the genus Homo, said Dr. Villemoire, assistant professor at the University of Nevada, lead author of the study in the journal Science. Now, there's a lot more to this article here that I want you guys to go and take a look at. There's quite a bit more, actually, and there's a video, too. I tried to pull the audio from it, but for some reason, I was having issues with it, and it wouldn't let me pull the audio. So you might be able to watch it, get a little bit more information of it there. There's a picture of the jawbone itself, the profile pictures, top-bottom pictures, and the teeth. If it's fossilized, it's interesting that the bone kind of turns into what looks like petrified wood, but the teeth have turned black. So it's interesting to see the difference between the bone and the teeth and how they preserve in that fossilization process. It's interesting, but there's more there on this jawbone that is possibly making us a little bit older, 400,000 years or so older than what was previously thought. I thought it was really interesting. So I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Right now, we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we get back, we're going to be taking a look at a 200-year-old mummified monk that is said to not quite be dead, but just in a deep trance, a deep meditation. We're also going to be taking a look at humanity might be turning into a different type of animal, according to a Stanford historian. And something I thought was rather interesting, the Fairy Investigation Society. So you guys have fun, take a little bit of a break, get up, stretch. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back. We're going to be taking a look at an article now from oddityscentral.com. And note, before I get into that, I just wanted to say that if any of the articles that I've found are outdated, proven wrong, or, you know, whatever, please let me know. I'd love to hear about it, just so I know, you know, whether or not the articles are true or not. So this article, again, is courtesy of oddityscentral.com. A 200-year-old mummified monk is not dead. He's just meditating. According to a Buddhism expert, a mysterious mummified monk found almost perfectly preserved in a lotus position is causing controversy after a well-known Buddhism expert claimed he isn't actually dead, but in a deep meditative trance. The monk came to the attention of the authorities after a man was attempting to sell him on the black market in the Saganakarkhan province of Mongolia. Mongolian police have arrested the man, and the mummy is now being guarded by the National Center of Forensic Expertise at Ulaanbaatar. They believe the man might have stolen the mummy from another part of the country, a cave in the Kobsk region, and then hid it in his home. How creepy is that you would keep something like that in your own house if you actually did? Scientists are currently conducting forensic examinations on the 200-year-old mummy that was found wrapped in cattle skins. They're trying to determine how the body was so well preserved, although they do suspect that the nation's cold weather could have played a part. And if you look at the pictures, I mean, there's more to that article there, but if you go take a look at the pictures, he is very well preserved. I really hesitate to say that he is actually just in a trance. He is well preserved. Hair is there. You can even see the outline of where he had his hair cut at. The identity of the monk has not yet been established, but he's speculated to be the teacher of Lama Dashi Dorzo Itagalov, who was also found mummified. Over the last 50 years, there have been believed to be at least 40 cases like this in India involving Tibetan monks. It amazes me how well something can be preserved, how well someone can be preserved. Given the body and how flesh generally decays over time, it's amazing how well it's preserved when it's in the right conditions. I just thought it was really fascinating. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of whofortedblog.com. A gruesome discovery beneath Odessa's catacombs illustrates the dangers of urban exploration. This one's a bit on the gory side, so if you don't like seeing a dead person, I suggest this article, or just don't listen along, or fast forward, or just don't visit the site. The article says it's time for a public service announcement. While secret underground parties that happen in places like the off-limits areas of the Paris catacombs look like a blast, they're illegal for a reason. It's really, really, really easy to get lost in one of these, and one poor girl discovered that after a party in Odessa. Just outside of Ukraine's capital, Kiev, is the home of the world's largest catacombs with over 1,500 miles of subterranean tunnels. Odessa's catacombs even beat out the well-known Paris catacombs in terms of length. After nearly a century of mining operations beneath the city and a stint as a World War II hiding place, the government officially sealed all entrances to the tunnels in 1980. Well, at least they tried to anyway. Despite the best efforts of officials to keep adventurous folks out of the catacombs, The tunnels proved to be a popular spot for teenagers to hold their wild parties far from prying eyes. Unfortunately, the extreme isolation meant that while you could party in peace, your chances of dying in peace are also increased exponentially. In 2009, an urban explorer known only as Eugene took to the UER.com website to share a morbid discovery that he made deep in the Odessa catacombs. He found the body of a 19-year-old girl who was lost in the maze in the catacombs 2 years after she died. Now, just, I mean, the picture there that you see, I mean, you see these kids, they just look shocked in this picture, like they can't imagine what they're seeing, they can't believe what they're seeing. And apparently it did smell a lot, either that or they don't want their faces seen because they had their faces covered up at least from the nose down, you know, how you kind of pull your shirt up to block the smell of something. She apparently went missing to celebrate New Year's Eve in 2005 and wasn't found for a couple of years. You can take a look. There's some more pictures of the catacombs down there. It's an interesting place. Part of it actually looks like something you would see from a tomb in an ancient Egyptian pyramid or something. And the rest of them just look like something straight out of hell. It's crazy. I want you to go take a look at it and tell me what you think. It's interestingly beautiful, these pictures. Maybe it's just the lighting and the way the person took the pictures, but I find old stuff to be really fascinating anyway. So what I want you to do is just go take a look at these pictures. And I hate to say if you like this kind of stuff, but if you do, go take a look. I thought it was really interesting how scary it would be to get lost in a place like that and die of hunger. I mean, of lack of water, and how scared you would be because, you know, it's pitch black down there. Talk about terror. So the next article we're going to take a look at is courtesy of thewatchers.adorali.com. Humanity is turning into a different kind of animal, according to a historian at Stanford. Stanford Classics professor Ian Morris says that in the 21st century, our cultural evolution is feeding back into our biological evolution. The result may be technologically enhanced post-humans, as far removed from us as we are from Neanderthals. The blurring of the boundaries between humanity and technology will shape the future of civilization. Stanford's Ian Morris also points out that societies dedicated to democracy, openness, and gender equality have generally prospered, while those that rejected those values have suffered. Morris, the Jean and Rebecca Willard professor in classics, for some reason that just doesn't sound right. It might be a mistype. I don't know. If anybody knows what the Jean and Rebecca Willard professor in classics is, let me know. He began his career as an archaeologist and historian of ancient Greece, and in recent years has explored big picture issues in an evolutionary approach to world history. Scholars nowadays shy away from talks of progress because the word only means, if anything, we think we know what we are progressing toward. Evolution, however, is a different matter. We are definitely evolving in at least two different ways. The first is biological. Humanity has changed its environment across the last 10,000 years by creating big, complex societies. And this has changed the selective pressure acting on our genes. Very, very slowly, we are turning into a different kind of animal. The second kind of evolution is cultural. The cultures we have created also respond to the changing environment, and groups that develop in ways that fit their environment flourish at the expense of those who don't. In the last 200 years since the Industrial Revolution began, societies that adopted democracy, openness, and gender equality have generally prospered, while those that rejected them suffered. In the 21st century, though, we may be seeing a kind of third evolution. People, many of them at least at Stanford, are now blurring the boundaries between humans and technology so that our cultural evolution is feeding back into our biological evolution. The next 100 years might see the evolution of technologically enhanced post-humans, which seems a bit weird. Is that going to be more like a cyborg type of human, where it's part robot, part human? Or are the robots going to be taking over with our consciousness? I don't know. I thought it was really neat. There's a lot more to this article here, and quite a bit in the way of other stuff on this website. I really do like The Watchers. I thought it was an interesting website. So go and take a look at all that, and let's move on to the next article, which is courtesy of UniverseToday.com. A star that passed through the solar system just 70,000 years ago. Astronomers have reported the discovery of a star that passed within the outer reaches of our solar system 70,000 years ago, when early humans were beginning to take a foothold here on Earth. The stellar flyby was likely close enough to have influenced the orbits of comets in the outer Oort cloud, but Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons, our early ancestors, were not in danger. But now astronomers are ready to look for more stars like this one. Lead author Eric Momacek of the University of Rochester and collaborators report the closest known flyby of a star to the solar system, which was published in Astrophysical Journal on February 12, 2015. The flyby of the system likely caused negligible impact on the flux of long-period comets. The recent discovery of the binary highlights that dynamically important Oort cloud perturbers may be lurking among nearby stars. The star, named Schultz's star, was just 0.8 of a light year at closest approach to the Sun. In comparison, the nearest known star to the Sun is Proxima Centauri at 4.2 light years. While the internet has been rife with threads and accusations of a nemesis star that is approaching the inner solar system is somehow being hidden by NASA, this small red dwarf star with a companion represents the real thing. In 1984, the paleontologist David Raup and Jack Sapkowski postulated that a dim dwarf star, now widely known on the internet as the Nemesis star, was in a very long period solar orbit. The elliptical orbit brought the proposed star to the inner solar system every 26 million years, causing a rain of comets and mass extinctions on that period of time. By no coincidence, because of the sheer numbers of red dwarfs throughout the galaxy, Schultz's star nearly fits such a scenario. Nemesis was proposed to be in an orbit extending 95,000 astronomical units compared to Schultz's nearby flyby distance of 50,000 AUs. Recent studies of impacts on Earth, the Moon, and Mars have discounted the existence of a Nemesis star. But Schultz's star, a real-life Oort cloud perturber, was a small red dwarf star with an M9 spectral classification. M-class stars are the most common in our galaxy and likely the whole universe, as 75% of all stars are of this type. Schultz's is just 15% of the mass of our Sun. So it would be fairly small, but it would still be substantially bigger than the Earth. So, if it comes too close, it could be really, really bad. Well, there's a lot more to this article here and a few pictures that I thought were really neat showing the Oort cloud because, I mean, how many people really know what the Oort cloud looks like? I thought it was really neat. It's substantially big. It really is. The Oort cloud itself. But there are some more pictures there that kind of give you a representation of what happened with Schultz's star, how far away it was to our solar system, which it was pretty far. Makes me wonder about rogue stars and rogue planets. Do we really know what's out there and when it might come by here? I don't know if we actually really know or not. I just thought it was really interesting. So let's go ahead and move on to one more thing before we take another break. It's thefairiest.com, and it's the Fairy Investigation Society, or the Fairy Census. It's an attempt to gather, scientifically, the details of as many fairy sightings from the last century as possible, and to measure, in an associated survey, contemporary attitudes to fairies. The census was inspired by an early fairy census carried out by Marjorie Johnson and Alasdair Alpine MacGregor in 1955 and 56. A census that was published in 2014. There are two anonymous census forms, one for the witness accounts and one for secondhand accounts, experiences by your grandmother, your uncle, your friend, whatever. Confidentiality is assured, and in the case of publication, personal details will be changed to assure anonymity. There are these two here. If you witness the event, you can click on this number one link, and it'll take you to the firsthand experience. I just clicked on it. I'm going to go to it right now. If you're describing an event that happened to somebody else, you can click on this next link. If you want to do the survey on fairy belief, there's a link there to it. In circumstances where filling out the census online is difficult, you can send them a printed copy of it. Now, the survey, it asks you if you're male or female, what your nationality or your ethnicity is, how old you are, what age group you're in, how old you were when you had your experience, approximately, what the experience, when it took place, where did it take place, in what region did it take place, the time, what kind of a setting you were in. There's a few questions there. I thought it was really neat. I think there's quite a bit more to it because there's a little continue button down at the bottom and it says that you're 20% completed. So there's a lot of questions there that are in depth. Somebody is actually taking a census on fairies. So you guys, we're going to take another break here. I'll let you guys listen to some music. When we come back, we're going to be taking a look at a tiny robotic scallop that'll swim through your skin and eyeball fluid to fix up any problems that you might have. The top 10 most haunted spots in Derbyshire, a little girl ghost with a deer, and a woman claims that her photograph was photobombed by a ghost baby. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hello, TJ and company. It's Tyrus, longtime listener, first-time commercial maker. I want everyone to know about the End Depression podcast. We have ideas and techniques especially useful to anyone who feels they are dealing with depression. And the shows are really designed to assist in what is ready to be revealed within you. And that is a great bliss and a deep sense of peace. The podcast is on iTunes, or go to the website www.tyrusgray.com, T-Y-R-U-S-G-R-A-Y, to listen to the End Depression podcast.
Pandemic reads like the love child of Michael Crichton and David Cronenberg, best-selling author James S.A. Corey.
On January 21st, author Scott Sigler brings you the novel Pandemic, the final installment of the groundbreaking Infected trilogy.
Sigler is masterful at grabbing the reader by the throat and refusing to let go. Best-selling author Lincoln Child.
Pandemic combines horror and hard science in a blistering, body-morphing tale of global collapse.
Part Stephen King, part Chuck Palahniuk. Best-selling author James Rollins.
Visit scottsigler.com/pandemic to see the disturbing video trailer and to get info on the Pandemic book tour running January 18th to the 27th.
Pandemic seriously rocks the action while delving deep into character. Highly recommended. Best-selling author Jonathan Mayberry.
Pandemic. Available in all bookstores, on Amazon.com, and at scottsigler.com/pandemic.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's go ahead and take a look at the next article, which is courtesy of Engadget.com. And their tiny robotic scallops that can swim through your blood and eyeball fluid to fix you up. For years now, scientists have been trying to develop microscopic robots that can swim through bodily fluids and repair damaged cells or deliver medicine. Scientists from the Max Planck Institute for Intelligent Systems in Germany believe they've got the perfect design, in the form of scallops so small they can barely be seen with the naked eye. These micro-robo-scallops move back and forth to swim through blood, eyeball fluids, and other liquids inside our body. The scientists believe mimicking the way a true scallop swims is ideal due to a number of reasons. First, moving backward and forward is the best way to swim through non-Newtonian fluids or liquids that can grow thicker or thinner depending on the situation. As you've likely guessed, our bodily fluids are good examples, so is ublek, or the water cornstarch mixture. It's kind of liquidy at one point, but if you hit it real hard, it's solid. It's a 1 to 1.5 to 2 mixture of water to cornstarch, as opposed to water, which can retain its viscosity. Second, the microscallops don't need much power to be able to move that way. They don't require batteries or even motors. They're just energy provided by an external magnetic field. According to the scientists, they don't have a particular purpose in mind for the minuscule scallop. Instead, they're hoping it becomes a reference for designs for other teams and companies that want to develop advanced medical technologies. So if you're willing to follow these robots' examples and swim through some scientific terminology, head over to Nature, where the team's paper has been recently published. Now, before we go on to the next article, I have to say, for some reason, I've not been feeling too well the past few days, and for some reason, my voice is starting to give out on me, so hopefully I don't sound too terribly bad for not having gotten behind the microphone in like 2.5 years. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of iokh.gr. A farmer claims a skull that was found in a chained box is from a werewolf. A farmer in a small village in Macedonia is digging up a new part of his field when the plow hits an object. It's a box that's chained shut. Being brave and curious and probably hoping it contained gold, he opens the box and finds a strange skull that looks to him to be from a werewolf, or a varkalok in the native language. That's the story. A farmer named Trake from Novo Selo Stipsko in Macedonia told Philip Ganov, a Bulgarian student who was in the village doing research on the Balkan Wars. There are pictures here for you to be able to take a look at the box. The inside lid of the box contains lettering in Cyrillic script, which is common in Bulgarian and Macedonian language. No translation was given of the lettering, so if you know what it says, please let me know. I would love to hear it. The farmer wouldn't part with his werewolf skull, but he did let Ganov take pictures of it, which you'll see here. To me, it looks more like a skull of a baboon than anything else. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear what you guys have as far as an opinion as to whether or not this is a werewolf skull or maybe just a baboon skull. All right, well, the next article is courtesy of derbytelegraph.co.uk. I'll post a link up to everything that I'm talking about so you guys can go and take a read on them, see what you think. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. A vampire grave has been found in Bulgaria. And there's a picture of it here. You can actually see what it's talking about whenever it mentions the stake. A skeleton with a stake driven through its chest has been unearthed in Bulgaria in what archaeologists are terming a vampire grave. Looks like it has a lot of head trauma, too. A vampire grave containing a skeleton with a stake driven through its chest has been unearthed by a man known as Bulgaria's Indiana Jones. Professor Nikolai Ovcharov, a crusading archaeologist who has dedicated his life to unearthing the mysteries of ancient civilizations, said that he had made the discovery while excavating the ruins of Perperikon, an ancient Thracian city located in southern Bulgaria, close to the border with Greece. The city, inhabited since 5000 BC but only discovered 20 years ago, is believed to be the site of the Temple of Dionysus. I think I pronounced that correctly, but maybe not. My ability to pronounce Greek names sometimes is a little lacking, which is the Greek god of wine and fertility. And among the finds at the site, which includes a hilltop citadel, a fortress, and a sanctuary, are a series of vampire graves. Professor Ovcharov announced that he had found a remarkably preserved medieval skeleton on the site in which he had termed a vampire grave. "We have no doubts that once again we're seeing an anti-vampire ritual being carried out," said Professor Ovcharov. He explained that the metal was driven through the corpse to stop a bad person, quote-unquote, from rising from the dead and terrorizing the living. Often they were applied to people who had died in unusual circumstances, such as a suicide. The skeleton, thought to be that of a middle-aged man between 40 and 50, had a heavy piece of plowshare, an iron rod used in a plow, hammered through his chest. The left leg below the knee had also been removed and left beside the skeleton. The plowshares weighed in almost 2 pounds and it dug into the body into a broken shoulder bone. "You can clearly see how the collarbone has been literally popped out," said Professor Ovcharov. The find is the third such discovery in Bulgaria and bears a strong similarity to two previous graves discovered in 2012 and 13 in the Bulgarian seaside town of Sozopol, 200 miles east of Perperikon, which were nicknamed the Twin Vampires of Sozopol. According to Bozidar Dimitrov, who runs the National History Museum in Sofia, about 100 skeletons have been found in Bulgaria. There's a little bit more there that I kind of skipped over to let you guys go and read, but there's a few pictures there. The main one, sorry, my voice is giving out on me. The main image up at the top is a picture of this skeleton, this middle-aged man with the plowshare, the iron rod through his chest. It goes right through his heart. It's pretty crazy. It's an interesting picture. And the rest, the other is the dig near the Thracian temple of Perperikon. And I guess I haven't talked this much in a long time, so, you know, maybe my voice is just gone. This next article is courtesy of paranormal.about.com, and it's a picture of a ghost girl with deer. And the article says, "My girlfriend recently showed me a picture that her mom showed of her best friend's game camera picture from Oklahoma of two deer and a little girl in a white nightgown in the woods in the middle of the night. It's kind of strange, and the little girl is clear as day. It's either fabricated or it's not." The way, I don't know if you guys have seen this or not, but this is kind of a creepy picture. A game camera, if for those of you who don't know, is attached to a tree or some solid surface, and it's motion sensitive, and whenever something walks in front of it or moves in front of it, it'll take a picture. Well, this shows a black and white picture with infrared light. You see two white-tailed deer, I believe. One is a buck and one is a doe or a young buck without horns, and one of the deer, the one with the antlers, is looking right at the camera. The other one is back what looks to maybe be about 10 feet or so and is looking off to its right or to the left of the picture. And you see this little girl. Looks like she might be a little scared that she heard a picture being taken. I mean, this little girl can't be more than 5, 6, 7 years old and in a nightgown. And it's creepy to say the least. I want you guys to go and take a look at the picture and tell me what you think. Over the next article is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. It's kind of a funny picture. You get to actually see the guy in a picture that it's funny to say the least. He was running around naked and claiming he was Bigfoot and from a family of Sasquatch. He got 10 years in jail after attacking an armed hunter in the woods with a rock. Jeff McDonald had gone out hunting close to his home in Manning, Oregon. He spotted a man in tan clothing in the woods who turned out to be Linus Norgren. The 22-year-old was naked and claimed he was from a family of Sasquatch. Norgren struck Mr. McDonald on the head before grabbing the hunter's neck, but then he passed out and Mr. McDonald was able to raise the alarm. Jury heard Norgren experienced symptoms of untreated bipolar disorder, claimed he acted in self-defense, but was jailed for 10 years for the attack. I mean, he's a big kid. He's got some muscle to him. I'm sure he was probably pretty strong. But anyway, I just thought it was an interesting article that, you know, he's running around saying that he was Bigfoot and he was from a family of Sasquatch. To me, it sounds like he either did too many drugs or you got some serious psychotic problems. It's interesting to say the least. Now, we've only got two articles left. This article is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk as well. It's a picture that a woman took that apparently some kind of a ghost girl and an alien or something photobombed their family portrait. A chilling image, to say the least. It is really interesting. They're saying that it claims to show the ghost of a young drowning victim. The spine-tingling photograph was posted on Facebook by Australian Kim Davison, but things began to get real spooky when it was revealed that a little girl died in the same spot 100 years prior. Miss Davison from Queensland posted the image, which was taken in 2014. It appears to show two women and four children swimming. However, Miss Davison and Jesse Liu, the other adult in the photo, are adamant that they were only with three children when the photo was taken. Now, it's to say the least, it's interesting. There's more to this article here that you can go and take a look at about the little girl that died in the swimming hole in 1915. Her name was Doreen O'Sullivan. She was only 13 when she drowned, but go take a look at it and let me know what you think. Personally, I'm not so sure that it actually looks like a little ghost girl. It almost kind of looks a little alienish or a little like a troll or something. I don't know. You have to go take a look at it and draw the conclusion for yourself. Is it a real photo? Really, if you look at the people in the picture, they don't seem to be noticing this extra person. Is it just the way the water is? Is it a reflection? I don't really know, but go take a look at it. Draw your own conclusions. Let me know what you think. Now, the last article that I wanted to take a look at, I know, it's courtesy of beforeitsnews.com, and it's a nuclear explosion, a mushroom cloud, imaged on Mars. Now, this is an interesting article. There's not much there to it, and a little long-winded if you ask me for the little bit that's there. But there's a video, mushroom cloud, imaged by India's Mars Orbiter, confirms huge explosions on Mars. The video goes in to show just a picture zoomed in, and it does actually look like a big mushroom cloud explosion on the surface of Mars. I mean, is the military testing explosives on Mars to see what would happen? Is it some kind of a naturally occurring nuclear explosion, which, from what I understand, they naturally can happen? Was it a meteor strike? Was it some kind of a massive cave-in? Was it, you know, what was it? I don't really know. It's interesting to say the least. Maybe it was an explosion. Maybe it is just some kind of a pixel issue, like it was with the photographs of the moon earlier on in the show. There could possibly be some kind of explosion on Mars. There's a lot of pictures there for you to take a look at that kind of let you think maybe there really is something going on there. Mars has been known through different types of, you know, observations that they've made of the chemical makeup of the ground and everything, and some of the things that have been found there, that there has been some kind of a natural or man-made, for a lack of a better way to put it, events of nuclear magnitude going on there. I don't really know. I just thought it was interesting. So anyway, let's take another break here, and when we come back, we'll close out the show. Now I'm telling you, I'm so clementine. That is mine. I knew one thing, where would be again? Only a matter of time. With the ring of a dozen men and promise of agony. Prophesy of suicide. Take a last breath on your knees. Unleash unto you to perish and flee. Begin to stop me. Now, I know I haven't done this in a long time, so hopefully I'm not disappointing you guys. I hope it turned out okay. I'm just hoping that I can get back up on the ball and keep the show going and get back out there and make it better than it ever was without really changing it very much. I'm not really planning on changing it at all. It is what it is. I'm going to make it fun, whether it is if people come back and listen, they listen. If they don't, they don't. You know, if you are listening to this, I really do appreciate it. So anyway, let's get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. The IOTA promo net, which I used to get music from, is gone. It's dead. They just couldn't keep it going. So I'm trying to find other places to get music. The places that I have are okay. There's some good music on there, but there's not a lot. So I might just have to start replaying some of the music that I've used in the past till I can find a place that was as good as IOTA. I might just have to reuse the music or just find what I can and go from there. I'm always wanting to promote independent bands, so if you know somebody who has a band or has some music, send it my way or get them to contact me or whatever. Just wanted to give a big shout out to Rojan and Lobo out there at the Project Archivist podcast at projectarchivist.com. I love you guys. Hope you guys are doing good. If you guys have an experience or feedback, email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. You can call me and tell me your feedback or questions or whether you love or hate the show at 817-986-0019. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in the show are courtesy of the Freesound Project at freesound.org. You can also find me now on Instagram at the13skulls. That's the little at symbol, the13skulls. The numbers 1-3, 13 skulls. So look me up on Instagram. I'll post links to everything you've heard about in the show notes. If you have a podcast, radio show, book, or anything at all, and you want to send me a promo for it, have it played in the show, I would love to have it. So send it to me. I'd love to hear it. So, well, everyone, I hope you guys are having a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this. And I'll talk to you guys again on another day. Take a breath from every way you breathe. Yes, take off the pain. Three pains of anguish until my will is clean. Unleash, untold.